Hello and welcome to WS Podcast. My name is Wojciech Salski, I'll be your host for today. And before I begin, may I just remind you, if you find this podcast entertaining, useful in any way, shape or form, something that is worth coming back to, then please make sure to follow or subscribe. Maybe click that like button on your device. And of course, if you'd like to support the podcast by promoting it across your friends and colleagues, that goes the longest way, I think, apart from, of course, being a subscriber. And if you'd like to support the podcast in any other way, maybe by, sending me a little email or letting me know what kind of a book or topic you'd like me to discuss over the next generation of seasons, then please make sure to do. I am wholeheartedly grateful for all of you out there who do. I've been getting more and more of these over the past few months, especially as I've been discussing like freedom focused and monetary focused ideas. So I have some exciting interviews, sort of conversations, I guess, lined up because of these, and I'm very, very grateful. So thank you so much for all of you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your attention. Thank you for your bearing with my misspellings and ramblings. And I hope that essentially this is worth your while, right? It certainly is worth mine. So I hope we share this together. So today, as this is the fourth episode of the season in which we discuss the books related to finance, economy, global sort of macroeconomics and stuff, I have this amazing book for you, which is The Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel. And I'll just make sure that you can see it properly. And basically, as you can see here, and maybe I quite like the cover of it, so here is why. But yeah, even before we start by discussing the ideas within the book, I'll just quickly sort of run down through the biggest advantages, I think. So apparently this one is one of the books that many people recommend for beginners in terms of figuring out what to do with your finance, how finance works. It's mostly related to personal finance and from the perspective of just getting wealthy, getting healthy, getting wealthy, getting healthily wealthy and wealthily healthy, I guess. And it's interesting that it's basically quite an easy to read and practical focused book, which I think is really, really useful. There is not much sort of fluff around the topic. Some of the chapters are really, really brief, literally a few pages. We'll actually explore one of them today. And I enjoyed the read. I found many things somewhat already known to me, maybe because I've been reading quite a few books on finance and personal finance and economics, and I've been studying economics as well, both at uni and, you know, at work. But I think that the way the book is written is definitely one of the ones that I would suggest to someone completely green to the topic of finance. And also someone who doesn't want much, you know, fluff. They just want to get straight to the point. And maybe similarly to the book, The Four Laws for Financial Prosperity, or, you know, the one that we've done just two episodes ago, I'll link below. It's very action-oriented. At the end of each chapter, there are some bullet points and some ideas how you can put into action whatever the author is exploring. And I found the read easy and pleasurable. I sort of quite quickly went through it. And most importantly, and this is really sort of the crux of the matter, and I guess the title comes from this, the book talks a lot about our mindset and our emotions and just how much they play a role. Essentially, the first most important role in creating our wealth, or sort of standing in the way of us getting wealthy. So we'll explore that in a second. It's something that struck me, and I wanted to read this to you, is a quote with which the author decided to start the whole book, which is a quote from Napoleon, and it says, "A genius is a man who can do the average thing when everyone else around him is losing their mind." And I found that this really sort of underlines very well the essence of what the book talks about. And we'll discuss some of the ideas from the book. I have the quotes for you tagged. I'll read a few parts. I'll discuss them from the perspective of, you know, both what the author explores, plus sort of tying it into the different readings and episodes that we've done so far. And hopefully my aim for this episode is to provide you with enough knowledge to take action now if you didn't want to read the book, and also enough excitement and interest that you actually pick up the book. Because ultimately, as you probably know if you've been listening to this show for a while, most importantly, we're trying to unpack some ideas here to get us excited to start reading, because personally, from my perspective, people don't read enough. And quite frankly, I think if you want to learn about something, the most important thing is to find the actual source and explore it for yourself. And of course, you know, feel free to discuss it with others and so forth. But unless you've explored the actual source, it's very difficult from my perspective to truly know what you're subscribing to, or what you're what you think, really, where your source comes from, right? And so as much as you might want to just pick up your phone right now and scroll through some TikTok or other app, I would encourage you to tune in, and at the end of the episode, just get yourself this book, and hopefully you'll see the benefits of both. So without further ado, let's start. The first topic that I'll sort of, you know, chime in Mr. Hounsell for is the idea that financial success relies on soft skills. And it's not, it's counterintuitive in many ways. This idea that, you know, I'm pretty sure that if you were asked yourself, or maybe if you asked an average Jane or Joe on the street, how does one become rich? They will list a bunch of activities that wealthy or rich people do, and maybe some successes along the way. But I doubt that many people would point to soft skills or habits as the main driver. And of course, Mr. Morgan starts just with that, and he underscores it across the whole of the book going forward. So the quote is, "Financial outcomes are driven by luck, independent of intelligence and effort. And financial success is not a hard science. It's soft skill, where how you behave is more important than what you know." And before I go any further, you know, let's stop here for a moment and just ponder this idea, right? And we've discussed it briefly with other episodes dedicated to finance and to attitude, but also not only, to habits, right? Let's leave the sort of luck to the side. We'll come back to that later. But the point on soft skills and emotions is where we first stop. And I have some notes here on my little, you know, loyal companion of a notebook. And the interesting thing that I'd like you to ponder is the fear and greed index. If this is the first time you've heard about the fear and greed index, then please either stop this video or maybe just, you know, throw me to the side of your screen and look it up. It's actually the index that is very sort of telling of how the market, meaning the participants out there who are trading the different financial securities and, you know, stocks and bonds and commodities and everything, how is the market feeling? And this is really important, you know. We're starting an episode about the book, which is about the psychology of money. And in one of the first chapters, the author points out to us that majority of our financial success is up to luck and our soft skills, aka, of course, our ability to withstand boredom and withstand fear. And, you know, to put it in layman's terms, to not buy when something's overpriced and to not sell when something's low on its value, right? Out of fear of losing, and vice versa. Out of fear of missing out, people buy overpriced stocks and things, and out of greed for, you know, hope of greater gains, people get themselves in all kinds of pickles, right? And there are plenty of snake oil salesmen out there, and I bet plenty of them will stay. And unfortunately also, you know, in terms of gambling, I am pretty sure that the statistics on gambling are quite dire. And there are many reasons for it. I think the most straightforward one is, as people notice, even without understanding, that the value of their money sort of loses over time, they are propelled to spend, and they feel more and more demotivated, and so more and more likely to take advantage of somewhat hopeful, somewhat promising great returns quickly schemes. And that's where you get scammed, that's where you lose all of your money in a casino and so forth. But this fear and greed index is very telling, because if you think that getting wealthy is about numbers and logic and, you know, calculations, maybe to some degree it could be, and certainly it will help if you can calculate different things, and we'll explore that in at a later part in the episode. But would you have guessed before starting this episode that it is about emotions and about your fear and your greed that, according to the author, is the greatest determinant of your ability to success in finance over time? Now, the quote that the author uses from a financial trader, actually, Michael Burnick, is this one: some lessons have to be experienced before they can be understood. And I've written down this quote as I was preparing the episode, because it actually made me ponder whether or not you will be able to grasp what I'm talking about until you get burned. And of course, I hope you will. But I'm not sure I would have. As you might remember from one of my previous episodes, I've actually got scammed before. And, you know, so be it. That's a lesson learned. It was an expensive lesson, but it certainly was an important one. And, you know, talking about that fear and greed index, each of us will have that fear and greed index within us. And as the author, you know, sort of explores throughout the one of the first chapters of the book, it is very natural for us. And as Voltaire puts it, history never repeats itself, but man always does. It is very natural for us to have acting, to be acting out of fear or to be acting out of greed. And you know, it's a worth challenge to sort of put yourself in front of, to truly ask yourself, what kind of a person are you? Are you more fearful? Are you more greedy? Are you both, depending on the situation? You know, from my perspective, from my experience, I found that it was greed that got me over the edge to lose, you know, to get scammed, essentially. But it was fear underlying that greed that that I had to discover as well. And many of us, if not all, at some point in our life, will have to face some deep-seated fears. And of course, this episode is about finance and not about figuring out your traumas from the past. But if we assume that everything is connected, and if we assume that what the author claims to be the case, that our upbringing and our experiences determine to a greater degree than we would expect how we act and how we get wealthy or not, or how we allow our money to, you know, sort of to leave us, or to how we allow it to stay with us. It's really important then to reflect on yourself and maybe try it out. You know, a good challenge for you, if you're obviously above the age that you need to be to attend a local casino, you know, this might be an interesting experiment for yourself. I certainly did it with me, with myself and my family, to go to a casino and see how you act. You know, put some money on the table, start playing for a bit, and observe your emotions. Notice whether you're acting out of fear, whether you're acting out of curiosity, out of greed. Feel those emotions, because then once you've mapped them, once you know how does it feel for you to be greedy, it might just save you a couple of dollars or a couple of $100,000 in the future when you recognize that experience happening just before you were to make some risky bet on the, you know, on your trading account or stuff like that. So, you know, I'm not encouraging anyone to gamble. If anything, each to their own, and you know, be wary of those. But it certainly can serve you as a great experience, of which Michael Bernick mentions in the quote, that you might need to be able to recognize your own fear and greed index. And you know, if it is real, that it's mostly emotions that play a role in us becoming wealthy, we need to get ahead of the game and sort of figure out what kind of emotions drive us in those moments. So I encourage you to have some inner exploration adventure in the coming, you know, days, months, weeks, years. Now, one more thing that I wanted to mention on this point before we go any further is this one. Every decision people make with money is justified by taking the information they have at the moment and plugging it into their unique mental model of how the world works. And this is an important point, because you might think that it is a very it's an obvious option, it's an obvious perspective, everyone else thinks the same way, and how can they not see this amazing opportunity, or how can they not see that this is a scam? Well, according to the author, and I'm pretty sure you would agree, each of us is looking through a very different lens, and that lens is mostly, you know, sort of developed over time through our experiences. And something that might seem very obvious to you might be completely unattainable, unnoticeable to someone else. And yet again, a great example of this is having a past experience with that thing. If you've never seen a table, the first time you will see a table, you might not fully comprehend what to do with a table. Of course, if you've seen a chair before or a little stool, you might, or maybe a rock, you might sort of kind of deduct that it might serve a similar purpose of putting things onto it or maybe stepping up on it or maybe sitting on it. But ultimately, you're much less likely to use that technology tool of a table the same way as one who uses a table on the daily basis would. If you if you've seen a table for the first time. And this applies to everything else. You know, if you've never had your heart broken the first time, it sucks, right? Of course, every other time it probably sucks as well, but at least you might notice the pattern and you might see yourself coming up, you know, approaching that point in advance. Experience is a merciless, but also a great teacher, right? And the author really encourages us to take part in noticing and expecting that whatever you think is obvious for everyone else, it probably isn't. And so if you are to pass on the knowledge, you should probably check yourself first for all of your biases to ensure that you don't skip over the essential foundational parts while going through those things that you're trying to share. And it's a fair challenge, you know. Come to think of it, this is exactly the challenge that I'm having when I'm here sort of putting across some sort of a breakdown of ideas from a book, from my mind to yours, right? You might have some different patterns of thinking. Maybe you've not listened to a few episodes that I've mentioned, and therefore you have some holes in your knowledge. Of course, I might have an ignorance of a certain aspect of this reading because I simply did not notice it. And when you read this book, you will notice those things and you might skim over the ones that I thought were important. You know, you could do an experiment of just giving a highlighter of different color to each of your friends and then lending them the same book and asking them to highlight what they think is important for them. And you would find that the majority of the highlights they did are different to one another. We notice different things because of our experience. And this plays a huge role in our irrational acting in the market, which those that seem to know it all tell you that it's very rational. And of course, if you notice any news about finance, there is little to no rationality in there. And I think the fear and greed index is a great indicator, pun intended, of that fact, right? So the second second topic I'd like to explore is really interesting because it's also very personal. When I say, what does it mean for you to be wealthy? What are your thoughts? Have a moment now and think, what would be enough money for you? What amount of money would make you wealthy, or what amount of stuff would make you wealthy, or what kind of an activity, what kind of a lifestyle would make you feel wealthy? Maybe you feel wealthy already, you know, maybe you feel abundant and wealthy even just by being able to listen to this episode, because that means that you have access to so many wonders of technology these days. Now, in terms of financial wealth, a great sort of invitation from the author that, and I'll read in a second the different pointers that he makes here, is to really ask yourself, how much do you think you need to be wealthy, whatever that means to you? And what I've noticed in my own experience of sort of pondering this and also having a little adventure of trying to calculate how much would I need to live the kind of life that I sort of strive for, I found that first, it's not as much as I thought initially, and it's very much so measurable. It's not abstract. So, you know, let's do just a thought experiment. I bet many people, if they were asked just, you know, sort of off the cuff, how much money would you want to have to feel wealthy? I think many people would say something, you know, some interesting number such as £1 million or 10 trillion or maybe 200,000 or, you know, whatever. The thing is, though, and I don't remember from which book, it's not from this one, but, you know, maybe it will come back to me, but there was one book about finance that I've encountered a few years back that actually walked you through this activity of just writing down, you know, researching and writing down the different prices of things that you think would make your life feel like a wealthy person. Right. And then you were supposed to just sort of, you know, divide it into months, figure out how much you would be paying, whether they were on credit or whether they would be, you know, bought straight off the bat and stuff. And essentially, after writing down a bunch of things for myself, such as I'd like to have a nice car, you know, there was some really luxurious car that I always wanted, and I'd like to be living in this place with, you know, in a neighborhood home and this and that. I'd like to take a private jet trip once in a while and stuff, like things that at the time I thought are what would make me wealthy. And then I divided it and I actually researched how much it costs. And then I figured out maybe I don't need my own private jet, but I still can benefit from hiring one when I need it and stuff. Sort of, you know, after writing down all of those things, I confronted the amount that I initially stated, which was something like £1 million or £2 million. And it turned out that it was basically like 30% of what I estimated, even less, I think, something like 200,000 overall. Of course, that's still quite a bit of money, don't get me wrong, but my point here is that when you ask yourself what is enough for you, and you dive deeper into that question, when you actually, you know, maybe write down the things that you would consider to be worth that money that you would like to have a month, a year, you know, to be able to sustain yourself in that lifestyle, you might find that it's actually much lower than you were estimated just by the off-the-cuff remark of I'd like $1 million, you know. So yeah, it's just a funny little experiment to have. Now, the author writes a bunch of bullet points here, and this is in regards to how rich people do crazy things, and the whole chapter is dedicated to the fact that many people never stop obsessing over money even when they have a lot of it. And quotes here, a bunch of quotes I'll read is: there is no reason to risk what you have and need for what you don't have and don't need. So that's a few words of caution in terms of running and risking more and more of what you have for what you don't have, right? And now, a few of the things that are worth remembering is that: one, the hardest financial skill is getting the goalpost to stop moving. Something to ponder. Once you've established that goal, make sure that you don't move it. And it's funny because, you know, they say in Polish, you have a saying that appetite grows as you eat. And I think it can be very true to our, you know, sort of wealth pursuit as well. It's a challenge to keep spending the same amount while you're earning more and more. And I challenge you to do that because that's how you create wealth. Second, social comparison is the problem. By comparing yourself to others who have more, you will always feel you're in the lack. And therefore, you will always be pursuing more and more. And so, you know, you're basically moving that goalpost and constantly prolonging your feeling of satisfaction in achieving the goal. Enough is not too little. Enough is realizing that the opposite, an insatiable appetite for more, will push you to the point of regret. It's important to mark that line and sort of, you know, go towards it. And now, a few things that he mentions here. There are many things never worth risking, no matter the potential gain. And these are reputation, freedom and independence, family and friends, being loved by those who you want to love, happiness, and essentially, your best at keeping these things is knowing when it's time to stop taking risks that might harm them, knowing when you have enough. So what is your enough, right? What does it mean for you to be wealthy enough? I think this is a much deeper question that might initially seem to us. And quite frankly, I think it's quite an important one to ask yourself, especially from time to time, you know. You have only so many days in your life, and not to get too morbid here, but, you know, our time is limited. And you gotta choose what you dedicate your time to. And if that pursuit of money gets in the way of all the other things that are more valuable, you know, your family, your friends, your experiences with them, your happiness, your freedom, your ability to choose your peace of mind, then you're probably not, you know, you're not too skillful about these choices. And of course, some of you might want to do that, and that's completely fine, each to their own. But the author here sort of underscores this idea that enough, whatever that enough is for you, is enough. You don't have to move that goalpost when you arrive. If you've hit that goalpost, you might as well celebrate and spend time with your loved ones. Now, of course, the book on finance would not be a book of finance on finance without compound interest. And I will not, you know, get bogged down in this again. Please refer to the episode on the Price of Tomorrow book. I'll link below, or maybe Let's Talk About Money book. Not a book episode, or maybe the Bitcoin Standard episode, or maybe the four laws of financial prosperity. We've already explored this idea of compound interest, and I'd like you to really hone in on this. And if you haven't, please look it up. Essentially, it's this power of either making the money work for you over time, or paying more than you would have to pay over time because of compounding interest either on the money you've lent or on the money you've borrowed, essentially. That's the quickest way to explain it, I guess. So now let's talk about the idea that we've actually explored before as well, which is this difference between getting wealthy and staying wealthy. And we sort of touched on this point slightly by, you know, mentioning this challenge of ensuring that whatever you spend do not increase as you earn more. And of course, some of it will. Costs tend to increase over time because we like to have a better, you know, life. What would you be doing your wealth creation for if not to enjoy it to some degree? But the challenge here is to ensure that you stay wealthy as you go, right? And according to the author, there are a million ways to get wealthy and plenty of books on how to do so. But there is only one way to stay wealthy. some combination of frugality and paranoia. And there is this interesting quote that people often use in the markets, you know, when they talk about the stock market and stuff like that, which is that the only the paranoid survive. And it's essentially this idea from Ray Dalio, which we've explored as well. And there is a quote from him that if you worry, you don't have to worry. If you do not worry, you have to worry, right? If you anticipate, plan, think about a few different outcomes and don't assume that always everything will turn out exactly as you plan, then you're more likely to stay in the game and enjoy the ride than people that won't do so. And, you know, of course, yet again, to get wealthy, according to the author, there are many ways. Of course, the best way is to just make more money, whether by your income, your investments, whatever. You know, I'm not here to provide you with financial advice to any degree. But in terms of staying wealthy, the game, yet again, is all about those two emotions on the index of fear and greed. It's about this frugality and paranoia, right? Being fearful enough not to risk it all on one sort of toss of heads and tails, and being sufficiently satiated and frugal not to overreach, not to overspend, not to fall into debt over things that you don't need, over the time horizon that is too short. And of course, I wouldn't be myself if I didn't mention here the instant versus delayed gratification game, which we are all playing every day. And, you know, the one thing that I'll say here from my perspective, reading this book and the many others, it seems to me that there might be some correlation between being able to act on delayed gratification basis and being able to amass wealth and get better over time. And of course, this applies to everything else. And what do I know? Maybe I'm wrong, but I have not found many examples across my friends and family of people that play the instant gratification route and have the kind of results that one would expect from, you know, this getting wealthy, getting healthy, getting better deal. I believe that in all facets of our lives, having a good, healthy relationship with your future self and acting on the behalf and benefit and to the benefit of those that come after us, including ourselves, into the future, you might just find yourself on the better, you know, in a better place, essentially, when the time comes. And we've explored that so many times. You know, there are episodes out there who touch on this, and this book just proves the point, right? The author mentions here compounding by saying, "Compounding only works if you can give an asset years and years to grow. It's like planting oak trees. A year of growth will never show much progress. 10 years can make a meaningful difference, and 50 years can create something absolutely extraordinary." A interesting idea here is also that you should have a barbelled personality, which is you're optimistic about the future, but paranoid about what will prevent you from getting to the future. And according to the author, sensible optimism is a belief that the odds are in your favor, and over time things will balance out to a good outcome, even if what happens in between is filled with misery. Now, of course, as we explore in all these episodes and all these ideas, you gotta be, I don't know, I wonder if you can hear this. Someone decided to take out the trash right now. Well, that's a first for the show. But yeah, sorry. So in terms of these ideas, all of them, I think, tie to this idea of, you know, moderation, right? I assume that if you become so frugal and so sort of like Scrooge from the Christmas story, that you never spend on anything, you never get out of the house, you never, you know, you never even eat, you'll probably die, or at least you'll suffer. And then, of course, on the other hand, if you're overspending constantly, you might sort of get away with overspending and maxing out your credit cards and all your credit lines for a month or two, but at some point you will be broke, and at some point you will be in great misery, and you'll probably bring that misery along for you know, your family and whoever else is affected. So there's probably a sweet spot somewhere there between being completely, you know, crazily frugal and being completely crazily outgoing with all your outgoings. But yeah, in the essence, the idea here is that to get wealthy is actually, according to the author, much easier than to stay wealthy. And of course, we've all heard those stories about people winning lottery tickets, or young athletes or actors and actresses getting crazily wealthy instantaneously, and then falling into some bad habits and going broke quickly after, simply because they have not had that mindset and that healthy dose of paranoia and frugality within them. And you know, it's the kind of discussion that some people might want to have with themselves. How would you like to go about? Would you like to plan for the long term, or would you like to have fun instantaneously? And of course, one and the other have its benefits, but it's for you and myself to choose. Now, topic number four is about freedom, funnily enough. And we've obviously had a very interesting two session topic on freedom, so I'll link below the episodes for both, the links for both episodes. But the topic on freedom here, something that I literally written here, yes, with exclamation mark. I'll read the quote and then I'll mention it to you. The highest form of wealth is the ability to wake up every morning and say, I can do whatever I want today. The ability to do what you want, when you want, with who you want, for as long as you want, is priceless. It is the highest dividend money pays. Having a strong sense of controlling one's life is a more dependable predictor of positive feelings of well-being than any of the objective conditions of life we have considered. And doing something you love on a schedule you can't control can feel the same as doing something you hate. Now, a few different quotes I've thrown at you, but the bottom line is very straightforward. As you'll find with good habits formed and investments and saving strategies and assets bought and your wealth increasing, you'll find that more and more of your money, which essentially in spiritual or energetic physics terms really is a store of your energy that you can project, because you've amassed it, and this potential energy can be projected to either, you know, bring forth a new car from the dealership, or maybe to build a home, or maybe to have a great vacation. As your wealth grows, and that potential energy to be expended grows, you become more and more independent of it, right? You are, it's like with health. Health and money are very similar in a way that when you don't have it, it consumes almost every waking moment. If you're completely broke, you're probably suffering quite a bit from being broke, unless you're, you know, fully ignorant of the fact, or maybe you will willfully pretend that you don't mind. In the same way, if you're ill, of course you cannot enjoy any other facet of your life, because, you know, your whole being is affected by the fact that you're ill. And so it's funny when people say that, oh, money is not everything. Of course. And, you know, money might not buy happiness, but try to be happy or try to do anything without having any money, right? It's absurd to think that just by not considering it an important aspect of your life, it isn't. You might just be up for a very unfortunate, sad surprise. Now, the point here is that money, as this potential energy, is also a potential for freedom, right? If you are in a position such as myself, where you have a job to which you have to go each day of the week, apart from weekends maybe, to make a certain amount of money so you can pay for all of your expenses in the month, then you don't have that much freedom about going to work or not. You know, quite frankly, if you observe yourself or anyone around you, people are less likely to miss a day of work than to miss any other thing they have in the week. It simply is so ingrained in us as a need, because we need to live and living costs, that we will, you know, sometimes even being ill, you will still go to work, right? Because otherwise you're worried that you might not be able to pay your rent, or you might not be able to feed your kids and whatever. The point here is your money that you earn matters to you, and it matters most when you don't have enough of it. The more you have, the more potential you have for freedom. Let's say, you know, let's have a case of three different people. There is one person, let's call him John, that doesn't have any savings, doesn't have any investments, and he lives from paycheck to paycheck. So by the month's end, he's completely spent, and he needs to make sure to go to work in the coming month to make money to enjoy that month of paying all the bills and go again and again. Of course, in John's situation, unless he changes his strategy, he's unlikely to have any freedom whatsoever of choosing a different job or even of leaving this one, because unless he has a different option, he's basically stuck with it, because bills don't really listen to you saying, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't attend work yesterday because I was feeling ill. Bills just arrive and you have to pay them. Now, the second person might be Jenny. And Jenny has 2 months worth of savings on her account. Now, Jenny still needs to go to work to pay for her life expenses. But let's say that Jenny suddenly decides that she'd like to change job. And one option, and a more optimistic one, is of course that she starts applying to different jobs as she works in her previous one. And so she doesn't even have to take a time off from working to get a new job. And potentially she could just go straight from one to another. But let's say that in the meantime, she decides to leave her work because it's just too toxic. She doesn't like it anymore. Now, because of her 2 months savings, she has this freedom of 2 months worth of energy she can expend without having to go to work. And of course, it's not an ideal scenario, because 2 months is quite a short period of time to find a new job, but she is in a much better, stronger, freedom-wise position than John is. John has no savings whatsoever, and so he has no choice whatsoever to make these concessions and to take a break. Now, imagine there is also a third person that we'll call Sam. And Sam has consistently saved and invested money. And so over time, his wealth became so great that he could afford to live off his savings and investments for a year. Now, Sam, in that scenario, has much more freedom, both exponentially, essentially more from John, and quite a big amount more freedom from Jenny, because not only can he decide to quit his job and he will still have a year to find a new one, but maybe because of his investments, his money will actually be making money as he's not going to work. And that's where we get to the point of compound interest and, of course, getting wealthy and staying wealthy. If you can get from the point of making your ends meet to the point of having enough savings to have a choice, to the point that your money works for you, so you don't have to work every day, you become truly free and truly wealthy from the perspective of what the money can give you. And I think it's a worthy goal. Some call it financial independence, some call it financial freedom. Whatever that is to you, it's something that the author here explores as a point of all of our efforts, right? To create more freedom for ourselves, to both choose, to be more picky with our work, and also to be able to be in charge of our time and the way we spend and with whom we spend it. And according to the author, according to some different studies and research, agency is something that plays a crucial role in our feelings of satisfaction with our life. And it's definitely something worth pondering, you know? How much of agency, how much of freedom and independence do you have right now? And your money on your account and in your savings and investments is actually a good indicator of just how much of that potential freedom you might have. Now, finally, the fifth theme, and obviously I'm skipping through quite a bit of the book, so, you know, I don't want to discourage you from reading it. I think it's only fair that you explore it for yourself, for your benefit and the benefit of your loved ones. The final topic that I would like to discuss with you today is an interesting one, because it's slightly different to what I've experienced in other finance-focused books and podcasts. And this one is about the fact that each of us has different goals. Now, few quotes for you. Investors often innocently take cues from other investors who are playing a different game than they are. When investors have different goals and time horizons, and they do in every asset class, prices that look ridiculous to one person can make sense to another, because the factors those investors pay attention to are different. Now, let's leave investors aside, right? Let's think about us, everyday people, not necessarily investors. We've already discussed that each of us comes with a different set of experiences and behaviors and patterns and perspectives and cultural norms and everything. If you take this into consideration, and if you also take into consideration that each of us has different goals, some people plan out 5 years into the future, some people plan out a month into the future, some people are more fearful on this fear and greed index, some people are more greedy, some people are more risk averse and some people are less risk averse. Some people have 30 more years to live, and some people might be going to retirement just now and they have much, you know, less time left to produce, to earn, and so forth. Each profile of us, each and every person will have different goals and therefore different perspective on those investments and finance strategies and, you know, saving goals. What for you is wealthy, means wealthy, is not necessarily what for me means wealthy, right? And for that reason, the last thing you should do, according to the author, is take bets, make decisions, choose your way of dealing with finance without really analyzing what motivates others and just simply by looking at what they do. If you copy-paste someone else's strategy, but you have different goals and expectations, don't be surprised if that strategy turns out to be exactly not what you need, right? And this is a big thing that I think each of us should reflect on in general, in terms of our life, in general, in terms of our goals, is that each of us has a different set of expectations and each of us sees things differently. Some are more patient, some are less patient. Some have more needs, some have less needs. Some have a family to take care of and some don't. Some might be likely to risk things and some don't, right? So just be wary. Be careful with this, because this will play a huge role. You know, I'll just briefly mention, I've been learning, and we've explored this on the episode, Why You Shouldn't Buy Bitcoin. I've been learning about Bitcoin for 4 years now. And I've been learning about investments for 4 or 5 years now. And talking to people about these things and encouraging them to educate themselves and to try it and to see what happens, you know, to learn, is one thing. But then at the end of the day, I don't know what is your goal and I don't know what you're willing to accept as your patience, your greed, your fear play a part. And I've already had experience such as this one, where someone listens to what I have to say, they consider this to be an advice, they take action, and then they come back to me disappointed after a month or a year and are upset that, you know, what we've discussed is not what they wanted. Like, it turns out that it was not the right choice for them. And of course, you know, first thing is I'm, you know, I'm sad for them in some ways. But of course, then I ask them, have you actually educated yourself? Do you understand what you did? Do you understand the choice you've made? And they become defensive. You know, they that particular person just said that they trusted me and they thought that I wish them well, which I do. And I bet you've had this experience before with your friends, family, and colleagues, that suddenly, because the person did not want to do their own research and they made some decisions, now they blame you for their ignorance, essentially, right? Because I didn't do anything for them. I simply pointed them in the direction and they took a shortcut, right? Without understanding the motives and without understanding the strategy, they just acted on what they thought is what I mean, without understanding what I mean. And this is an invitation for all of you and for myself as a reminder, as I'll listen to this episode in 20 years' time, still probably as ignorant of the world as I am right now. At the end of the day, people that will ask you for advice and also people that you will give advice to and people that you will ask advice from, we all have different perspectives and we all have different expectations. So unless you understand the motives behind what they do, and unless you map it onto your own expectations, don't take silly actions. And maybe in the words of Michael Botnick, some lessons have to be experienced before they can be understood. And maybe this is exactly what will happen anyhow, because we just learn apparently the best when we experience it on our own skin, right? So of course I wish for you and your colleagues and your family members to never make a mistake, but I'm pretty sure also that that mistake will be needed for you and for them to become better as people and more skilled and more experienced, because experience is essentially loads of failures with some successes along the way. And it's simply how we learn, right? But I just wanted to give you a word of caution of going around, you know, asking people advice without really doing your due diligence. And this is the bottom line for essentially all of these episodes that I've been creating and will continue to create. Do your own due diligence. Learn about things that will impact your life, because they will, you know, if you act and you invest, that will impact your life. And if something impacts your life, I think it's each of our responsibility to ensure that we understand the decision to the degree that we can understand it. Of course, that's never going to be 100%, but it's something to strive for. So, yeah, just remember that you and me and everyone else have different perspective and different goals. Now, the invitation for you, as if there wasn't enough invitation in this episode, is, of course, first and foremost, read the book. I think it's worth it. It's also quite a pleasurable one. Now, come back to that idea of what is enough for you. Figure out how much you would need in passive income, monthly or yearly, to not have to work and to do what you want to do in life, and see that figure. And if you want to strive towards financial freedom, financial independence, consider that figure, that amount, your goal. And of course, educate yourself and pursue the different routes of understanding how can you make your money work for you, because that's how wealth is created. It's according to the author, it's with this mixture of frugality and paranoia, of consistent action, compound interest, and educated, cold, not emotional actions. And so, yeah, I wish you all the wealth in the world. I think you will, if you apply these ideas from the book, you will attain your wealth level, whatever that means to you. I certainly will mine. And yeah, if you've enjoyed this episode and you haven't already, please make sure to follow or subscribe, whichever platform that is. And if you'd like to support the podcast in any other way, follow the link below. And I'll also put below all the links to the different episodes and ideas and book that we've explored. So thank you for your time. It's always a pleasure. Have a wonderful, wonderful week. Stay happy, stay healthy, and I'll see you next time.